never been a LeBron person, but call me a convert or a bandwagoner. But man, like after what he, after just how he decimated the Hawks and just manhandled the Bulls without what's that white boy's name? Love, Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And like without Kyrie Irving with hobble leg Joe over there.
Yeah.
Like I'm coming up. I'm coming along.
Yeah, maybe you can't have the discussion of LeBron over Jordan yet, but you can't deny the fact that he's closing the gap.
Well, I mean, for one thing, if he closes the gap, where are people going to buy khaki pants? And another thing is, if I can boil down what Elliot just said, I think what he means is that LeBron is really great when he gets his hands on some Hawkin' Bulls.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Inside the Locker here on oneofus.net. This is the Geekly Weekly sportscast.
Like
you know
that.
What?
Geekly Weekly. I
Geekly
like
Weekly. We may not be the smartest guys in the room, but we are always on the ball. And I'm your host, Brian Salisbury. I'm joined by JC DeLeon.
What's up?
And Elliot Fontanette.
Coming up on 2 years.
It is. Holy shit, we are coming up on 2 years. Very quickly. Yeah. Very quickly coming up on 2 years, not only of the website, but of this show, because this is one of our flagship shows we launched with. So
we're just as adorable as Riley Curry.
Just as adorable as Riley Curry.
Dude, does that mean people are going to write about us and be really pissy about us for no reason?
That's how I usually ask for beer after my third bottle of scotch. Yeah, so we have got some things to talk about, but first I want to let you know that Inside the Locker, like all of our content on One of Us, is available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast, and you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/oneofusnet. Yeah, it's for the whole website, but we don't have a page for this show in particular because it's like, why? You guys can get a hold of us on the Twitter. We also have a very special sponsor for this particular show, Salem's Vengeance, which is a young adult fantasy novel by Aaron Galvin. Forget everything you thought you knew about the Salem witch trials and check out Salem's Vengeance by Aaron Galvin, the first in a trilogy of young adult thrillers. Salem's Vengeance weaves fact and fiction to reveal what's happened after the trials ended. So check that out. If you check it out on Audible, maybe you can use your free download on it. Just go to audibletrials.com/oneofus, which is our other sponsor for the show. God, sponsors all over the place, son. It's like an NBA arena in here, in that it's really sweaty, and I want to go home. Yeah, so let's just jump right in with some headlines.
Flash to Captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
All right, guys, so obviously the first thing we're going to talk about this week is the RICO case. I'm calling it a RICO case. I don't think it actually is, but I'm calling it a RICO case that was just brought down against FIFA.
Yeah, it's like somebody had been just like robbing a store for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And like, oh shit, we should probably go bust them.
I would like to applaud the FBI on arriving at a conclusion that the rest of us arrived at about 30 years ago. That FIFA is completely fucking corrupt.
Yeah, what I don't get is, like, if they're this corrupt, why doesn't the United States just pull out? Just say, we're done, we're pulling out, we're not coming there at all.
We've never been good at pulling out, Elliot. and I mean that both politically and sexual politically. Like, we're as a nation, not super great about pulling out.
I mean, it's still beneficial for the U.S. to compete in the World Cup, despite the, you know, the glaring how corrupt they are.
Well, but I mean, beyond the corruption, they're using, like, basically slave labor to get everything constructed in Qatar.
Interesting fact, on my phone, if you type in Qatar in Google search and does the autocomplete, the fourth selection is, the third one is Qatar World Cup. The fourth one is Qatar World Cup deaths.
Yeah,
I also think that we have approached, because the FBI and the U.S. Attorney General are, you know, the ones that are spearheading this investigation, and by spearheading I mean letting it drain slowly after 24 years, I think we have approached this the same way we did World War II, which was like, oh, he's killing people by the hundreds. After a few years, we're not going to stand for that anymore.
We should wait.
We should just wait and see. We had a very wait and see policy when it came to FIFA, apparently.
Well, it's like Chris Rock's old bit that he was talking about how America doesn't want help until the flies come. And, you know, they starving, but wait for the flies. Wait for the flies. Oh, the flies is there. It's like, thank you, America.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
That's such a great bit.
I like that acting U.S. attorney Kelly Curry, not Steph Curry's sister, but Kelly Curry added, today's announcement should send a message that enough is enough, and I wanted it to be ... eventually.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, when people talk, it just reminds me of back in the turn of the... God, I can say this. Back at the turn of the century, back, you know, because wearing an onion was a time around your waist, was the style at the time, and I was known to do, back in Shelbyville. But, you know, people used to talk about, how do we stop downloaders? It's like, it's very simple. They just never really wanted to do it. Just sue a shit ton of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for a lot of money, collect on it. People will stop downloading real quick, but they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you have a rule, but you don't enforce it, it's not a rule. And I'm glad they're finally enforcing it. And from what I'm hearing, what I've been reading, not that I'm hearing anything, but what I've been reading is that apparently it was like what happened with Bill Clinton that really sort of tipped it. Bill Clinton apparently went around the world trying to get with Brad Pitt, with Morgan Freeman, with all these people, which sounds like a horrible time for him, let me tell you. Brad Pitt and Bill Clinton running around, that's a movie.
Yeah.
That's
a buddy comedy, yeah, I would pay thousands of dollars to see.
It's like, they must have had pussy parties at one point.
Pussy party, gonna throw a party with lots of pussy.
But it's like, apparently, like, he was so pissed that he had tried so hard, and it was to nothing, and it apparently was never gonna come to anything, because I guess America, if they did bribe somebody, they didn't bribe them well enough.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the bribes are interesting because, like, some people are wondering, the man who's at the head of FIFA, Sepp Blatter.
Don Corleone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He apparently follows the longstanding mafia principle of not getting one's hands dirty because they can't get anything on him. Like, he's never accepted a bribe personally.
He's like, insulated himself with a lot of, like, middlemen.
Yeah. No, that reminds me, like, I watched, and this is where Brian is going to choke me. I watched for the first time last night The French Connection.
You just watched that?
Yeah.
Well, at least you've seen it now. At least that's a thing that's happened in your life.
The Alamo was releasing I think it's like a sort of a the other side of that story.
Yeah, a movie called The Connection.
It looks so good.
It really does look good.
Yeah. And I wanted to watch it, so I got the context. And I've already seen American Gangster, so I have an idea of that context.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you watch that movie, if they say at the end, motherfuckers got caught, but nothing happened to them.
Yeah.
They really knew what they were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is the situation that was going on for fucking ever.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have we brought up... We have talked about the NCAA, and every time we talk about how corrupt the NCAA is, without fail, we'll say, they're the most corrupt organization next to FIFA, of course. Because this has just been ridiculous. The amount of shit that FIFA's gotten away with, just because they were this massive entity, mm-hmm. that we were like, there's no way anyone's ever going to come down on that. And finally they have. I was looking at FBI Director Comey said, as charged in the indictment, the defendants fostered a culture of corruption and greed that created an uneven playing field for the biggest sport in the world. Undisclosed and illegal payments, kickbacks, and bribes became a way of doing business. It really does sound like the third act of Goodfellas up in this bitch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the thing when you see, like, big organized crime and, like, powerful people,
mm-hmm.
they just get away with almost everything.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys are going to get away with this.
Yeah. You know who's happiest about this, by the way? Tom Brady.
You know, somebody's right.
Like, ah, no one's talking about me anymore.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
I mean, how do you console himself with all that money and marriage to Giselle?
Rolled around on a pile of Giselle and money.
That sounds... Oh, poor Tom Brady.
I know, I feel so bad for him. But yeah, like, the thing that is crazy to me is that it took so long, and it kills me that, like, when they sent in, like, Swiss plainclothes officers to arrest a bunch of the high-ranking FIFA officials, like... Can you imagine, like, all of a sudden somebody busts down Roger Goodell's door and is like, you're under arrest? Fuck yeah, that does not happen over here.
I just feel like Roger Goodell, like, you're mistaken.
Waves his hand like Palpatine.
Yeah, go away. You think you're the first one?
I will not go quietly.
Speaking of Star Wars references, dude, like, this is the first time I've noticed this, but I'm sitting like, I'm looking right at your DVD collection.
Yeah.
How many copies of Star Wars do you have?
Those are all VHS copies.
Jesus Christ.
And there were so many different VHS releases of Star Wars that I got hooked and I bought all of them. And the best part is that the one in the flat box set right there is in the right aspect ratio with nothing fucked up.
Oh, that's the Holy Grail.
That's the VHS version. Now, the laser discs are the same way. Mm-hmm. And then the best possible version are the despecialized editions that you can download online, where they took the Laserdisc, bumped up the resolution, yeah, and then, you know, cleaned it up, but then it still doesn't have the, well, see, the bullshit 97 editions.
And that's one of the good things about the mouse taking over Star Wars, because the mouse will not fuck with their money.
No, the mouse is going to figure out pretty quickly, oh, we can make more money by putting out the original versions? Fuck you, Lucas, we're doing it. Yeah. I can't wait for that day.
That idea that, oh, we destroy those. Motherfucker, you did not. Your ego was too goddamn big to destroy. It's like when people say, well, Elvis is alive. Yes, the man with the biggest ego in the world died on the fucking toilet.
Yeah, and he's alive. But he won't tell anybody? Yeah. I don't really buy that. But yeah, I think this is gonna... What's interesting is gonna be how the infrastructure of FIFA changes in the wake of these arrests, if at all. Like, you know what I mean? Like, is this really going to affect change? Yeah. Or is this just a big show, and FIFA is still too big an organization to actually be shaken by this?
It's probably mostly a big show, but I do hope that they reconsider the 2022 World Cup, even though... Even though so many workers have died building the stadium so far, and I wonder if FIFA would have got away with all this had they just not
accepted those wacky kids.
Yeah, had they just not accepted the bid from Qatar.
If they hadn't said, "Go ahead, suspend me." Oh wait, no, sorry, different discussion.
Yeah, if they hadn't accepted the bid from Qatar, a country that's no bigger than the size of Connecticut, that has 130 degree summers, that was dumb.
Well, we talked about it so much on the show where it's like, The person who was like Qatar's representative to pitch for the World Cup being hosted there got busted for giving a bribe to FIFA, but the FIFA official was never arrested for accepting the bribe. And I was like, how the fuck, do they not know what bribe means? It takes two people for a bribe to work. And it's like, it kills me that it was that blatant. And it still took how many years after that for this investigation to finally yield something?
But, I mean, that shit happens all the time. Like, one of the big problems with, like, give a perfect example, prostitution.
Yeah.
Since this is this is a form of prostitution, in my opinion. It's like, the prostitutes will get busted. The Johns usually get let off.
No, the Johns get off. That's the whole problem, Elliot.
Hey-oh! Oh, you know, I didn't talk to you about this, but there was an article written... It's a little bit of a tangent, but just real quick.
Little aside. Respect the sidebar.
There was a really disgusting article written by, let me see this guy's name. He's a sports writer about this owner's daughter. What's this guy's name? Chris Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this article about the Bucks' daughter, calling her a trophy daughter.
The Bucks' daughter?
Yeah, like the Milwaukee Bucks' daughter at the NBA draft.
Not this past year, but the draft lottery the year before. She was like 17 at the time. She was attractive. And it's why the NBA instituted that rule that if you're going to be the representative of your team at the lottery, you have to be a member of the staff.
Oh, okay.
A current player or like a legend.
Because some douche doesn't know how to control his shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really ugly. That's just bad form.
Yeah.
Just bad form. As is pretty much everything FIFA has done for the last 30 years. Like, I think it's funny to me too that Vladimir Putin is weighing in on the U.S. getting involved, saying that we are intentionally meddling with the game. And it's like, I'm sorry. Wait, whoa, hold on. You're accusing us of inappropriately meddling in the integrity of a game that not only has been a corrupt for 30 years, but to quote Jon Stewart's exact joke that burned Putin so bad. Yes, Putin said this while he scored 3 goals in a charity hockey game. So, yeah, not going to trust Vladimir Putin's objectivity.
Yeah, it's like, how about this? We'll stop when you got a Ukraine.
When you stop shooting airplanes out of the sky?
Yeah.
What? I said it because he did it. I hope that this actually does affect some change. I hope it's why. I mean, this could be like a massive blow to fix something that has been wrong forever, or it could just be all for show. And I don't know. I don't know which. I think it's going to really come down to what the next couple of weeks are really going to be crucial in deciding whether this is all for show or whether it's affected real change. Hey, speaking of change. Happy trails. Yes, adios to Tom Thibodeau, fired by the Chicago Bulls after his team failed to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. Is this firing legit? Is this warranted? Did the Bulls make the right move, JC?
I mean, yes and no. throughout Tibbs' tenure, they've gone to one Eastern Conference final. Similar to the Knicks in the 90s, like they can't seem to get past LeBron and either the Cavs or the Heat. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he wears thin on his players. He runs his players way too ragged, plays them too many minutes, doesn't respect the idea of, you know, minutes restriction and, you know, maintenance of you know, the preserving the bodies and things like that. It's so, yeah, it was definitely time for him to go. Like, Joakim Noah looked like a shell of himself. Derrick Rose, after three knee surgeries, was still playing 40-some-odd minutes. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler hasn't had the brunt of it as long as Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, and he was already beginning to get tired of it.
See, and that's interesting. I didn't think about it from that perspective. I was looking at it just from the numbers, where it's like, yeah, the Eastern Conference Finals, 1 year out of his five, fine, but they made the playoffs all 5 years mm-hmm. that he was there, and his prize player, his number one guy, has been injured so much over his tenure that, I don't know, I felt like it was a little unfair, but I think you make a good point about...
I also think, you know, hasn't the Bulls' ownership always just been fucking horrible? Hasn't that always been the situation where they said something, even when they had Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson, one of the arguably the best coach and player of their generation in the NBA, they said that it's not players or coaches that win championships, it's organizations.
That is bullshit.
It's like, motherfucker, you got Jordan.
I'm sorry. That is bullshit. And if that were the case, then the Raiders would have won every Super Bowl from here to eternity because nobody wheels and deals like Al Davis. Yeah, God rest his soul.
Towards the end of the second three-peat, the Bulls could have continued it, but Phil Jackson was tired of the management.
Yeah.
If Phil wasn't going to be there, Michael wasn't going to be there. The only one that stuck around was Scotty for a little bit. The organization is a little bit to blame, but I mean, with any coach, it's just kind of one of those things. You can win a lot in the regular season, but after a certain amount of time, if it doesn't amount to much, then you're just going to eventually lose.
You get Mark Jackson.
Yeah,
you get Mark Jackson. But, you know, interestingly enough,
that's a good example, yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, speaking of Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr and his Golden State Warriors are in the Western Conference Finals. The finals against the Cavaliers.
Fuck Houston.
Steve Kerr was this close to getting that job in New York. Yeah. They went with Phil Jackson, who had a much better pedigree of winning, and yet the Knicks finished fucking dead last.
I believe in the whole league they finished dead last.
Phil Jackson's the president, but he was about to hire Steve Kerr.
That's correct, and, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that would have been a disaster if Steve Kerr went there.
That's true. For him, it would have been a disaster.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I've been most wrong about, and it's probably why I'm more accepting of this Tibbs firing, because last year I was really against the Warriors firing Mark Jackson, because I just thought I thought they were 1 year away. And
I still think it's unfair.
Yeah. I mean, it turns out I was right about them being 1 year away, but they just needed that little extra push, and it was the push that Steve Kerr provided them.
I don't know if it was a push, it's just that they developed a little bit more. It's not fair, he has gone to the grocery store, got all these great ingredients, done all the prep work, has it in the oven. Oh, okay, this guy is going to come take over for you.
And I would have thought
that happens in MasterChef, I've seen it.
And I would have thought that if not for the Warriors starting lineup that played this year, was fully available to Mark Jackson last year, and those five guys together didn't play a single minute together last year.
I don't know.
So I just feel like Mark Jackson put a lot of faith in Andre Iguodala to be in the starting lineup, put a lot of faith in David Lee. And those are the two biggest
adjustments. You know what? I will say this for me, and this is my area of bias. And I'm, like, this is where I'm coming from.
You're talking about Glenn Bias?
The reason I think I have this issue is that as a black coach, got all the shit together, is on the 1 yard line, they bring in a white coach. It's like Ty Willingham, he was getting Notre Dame together, fire him. Or was it Stanford, where he just like, this shit happens all the time. And it just sort of sticks in my craw a little bit. I'm like, come on, man.
Next year to Inside the Locker, a new segment called Stuck in My Craw with Elliot Bunce.
It's like, man, give him just one more year. And if he didn't make it this year, then yeah.
Oh my God, we call it craw stickers. We just have an artwork where Elliot's drawn like a crawfish, which would
like,
make
oh, I see,
sense.
I don't like this. Yeah, this is what I don't like about that damn NBA.
The unfair firing, where I'd be with you on the point that you're trying to make, is the Monty Williams firing in New Orleans, because they straight up told him, if you get to the playoffs, your job will be fine. They got to the playoffs and they fired him. And they're probably going to bring in a white coach, either either Jeff Van Gundy or Vinny Del Negro.
You know,
that's ironic.
You know what I'm going to say is that that deal got worse all the time.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I'm not saying that's the reason. It's just something that it's sort of my antenna goes up. Yeah, wait a second here. But I'm not saying that's what happened. I don't think that's what happened. It's just like Steve Kerr gets to walk into a great situation. Mm-hmm. I just don't want him to... I want Steve Kerr to be thought of as Eric Spoelstra.
Elliot, you know as well as I do, they never call walking in the NBA. No. So he just walked right into it. Traveled right in. They're not going to call either one of those things.
There was
things.
Like a Houston player that like traveled like 9 steps. They like counted them.
Yep. Yeah. Well, speaking of Houston being eliminated by the Golden State Warriors, we now have set up a finals for this year of the Cavaliers with LeBron once again returning to the finals. Kind of ridiculous how often that guy gets to the finals against the Golden State Warriors. So, do the Warriors have enough to stop LeBron from getting another championship?
Yeah, they do.
They have it.
There you have it, folks.
Yeah. I'm just torn because, I mean, I love Steph Curry so much, but LeBron is obviously my favorite player.
Is nothing where you used to lie? Has your
I was just thinking
dry?
Natalie Imbruglia.
That's what's going on?
Wow, we are terrible people.
Right
just
here.
Just awful. Kaboom.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, LeBron's obviously my favorite player, and...
No. Really?
If he loses the finals again, his haters are just going to love it and talk about how he's gone to 6 finals and lost 4 of them.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, this is different. He is playing... This is the first time where it is impossible to say he's not playing for anybody besides Cleveland. He's not playing for himself.
No, he's got his own.
It does feel a little different, though, in the sense that like Golden State is such a great team. People... I think in this instance, people would be like, yeah, you had no chance of beating them anyway.
Because he didn't even expect to get here this year.
Right.
Like, he wasn't even supposed to be here today.
See, incidentally, there's apparently like a Clerks parody porn.
That's a thing that exists. Is it called Twerks?
No, it's just like Clerks XXX parody.
See, they're not even creative with the fucking names anymore. That's what really bugs me about it.
And I also learned that apparently, like, the companies will send critics, like, these weird, like, old porn videos or something.
Yeah.
That's like, it's hilarious.
That happens, actually.
It's like old 70s, like, grody porn.
I can speak from experience that is something that does happen.
To bring it back.
Bring it back.
Bring it back with a segue. We can't move on from Golden State without me saying, fuck you, Houston. Fuck you, Dwight Howard. And fuck you, James Harden. God, I was so happy to watch y'all lose. And I'm sorry. That's really petty. But fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, all year I kind of joked about having my anti-Harden bias and people...
A hard off, if you will.
Hard off.
Yeah.
People called me a hater.
Yeah, I'm a hater.
People were mad at me that I kept calling Houston fool's gold all year. And I think last night is the reason why. Like... Them winning game 4 is kind of an outlier because they were eventually going to have a hot shooting night.
They would have lost that game if he hadn't gone out.
Right. And yeah, despite having a hot shooting first quarter, Steph Curry, if he hadn't fallen hit in his head, they might have come back and win that game. I just when it comes time for them to truly shine, they don't step up.
The only
and
one
that's
that
the
was
reason
really...
why I called them fool's gold all year.
One that was really playing. Well, Harden was at least trying. He's just not consistent enough. Jason Terry didn't give up. Dwight Howard, his punk ass, gave up.
No, deuce, you say. Not anything he ever did in Los Angeles or Orlando before that. I never understood why that guy was such a hot commodity. I'm like, what? He's a big man. He can play, but he chooses not to.
That's
the thing. Yeah, it's like when he can, he's awesome. And the first 3 quarters of the game, I was like, hey, this is the Dwight that I like seeing. I don't hate Dwight. I don't even really hate James Harden.
I'm disappointed.
When Harden wants to play utilizing his skills and not just snapping his head back getting free throws, he's really talented. That step back jumper is
That's hard to defend.
Yeah.
He has failed us for the last time. So here's the question I'm going to pose to you guys to wrap up this segment. Who wins and in how many games? Elliot, I'm going to start with you.
I say Cleveland in 7.
All right.
It's going to be a very close game in game 7. I think LeBron just dominates the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. And just, I mean, literally muscles it home because, you know... One of the things you learned in the Atlanta series is you can have, to be fair, Golden State has legitimate stars in Clay and Curry and even Iguodala and Azalea, they're pretty good. But
wait, Azalea?
As
in Iggy Azalea?
Azili.
Azili.
Oh, okay. That's fancy.
Like, his name is Festus.
They're a lot better than Atlanta, but what that showed is when you have... It's one of the... I forgot who wrote this, but it was a brilliant line. It was on Deadspin. It was like, you know, when you have a team composed of no stars, everybody's a star.
Hmm.
And it's like, Curry is great, and he's the MVP, but I feel like if you lose, like, if you can take a few of those components out of that engine...
Mm-hmm.
You can really disrupt what they do. Because a lot of what they do relies on passing the ball and Sharon's caring and getting people open. But you can't do anything to Cleveland besides stop LeBron. That is your job.
Yeah.
And if they don't have the experience the Spurs had to take him apart last year. Like, so I think it's going to be close, but I think it goes to Cleveland.
The Spurs are the best at what they do, and what they do ain't pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be rooting hard for Cleveland, but I think it's going to be Warriors in six.
I'm also going to go with Warriors in six. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're too deep. They've got too many weapons. I do think some of the advantages that Cleveland can take advantage of. Golden State has a tendency to throw the ball away a lot, and defense is typically led by LeBron. If you turn the ball over on them, they eat that shit up, and they turn that into points. I think Iman Shumpert can take Klay Thompson out, and if you take Klay Thompson out, that will hurt them a little bit, but I mean, that happened in this series, and the Warriors still took out the Rockets in five.
You could try kneeing him in the head until his ears bleed. Yeah, that seems to be effective.
I mean, yeah. I know they're deep, but I just don't see them stopping LeBron, because he is, like, he just declared in the Atlanta series, this shit's not going to game five. Well,
And that's the thing, if LeBron will be aggressive and drive to the basket the way that he did in the Atlanta series.
Kyle Korver dove out the way.
Yeah. I think...
oh, God, here he comes!
If LeBron's going to play like that, Cleveland will have a definite chance. The other reason why I give the edge to the Warriors is because LeBron's jumper is broken right now.
Mm.
I don't know what is wrong with it. It's busted. Yes. He can't shoot threes. He can barely shoot from the outside right now. It pains me to see him shoot threes right now.
I am really glad you guys expounded upon your points, because when you both said going deep, I thought we were still talking about the Clerks porn parody. That is apparently not what we were talking about. I'm also going to go with the Warriors in six, but I have been famously wrong most of the time, so we'll see what happens. It is going to be a fight. I think it's definitely going to be an all-out brawl.
Another interesting thing why I think LeBron will be hated if he does win is because Steph Curry is now America's sweetheart, and so is Riley Curry.
He's not my sweetheart. I mean, yeah. Steph Curry, man, he's... I just feel like he hasn't faced a challenge like LeBron at his best. If he can get over LeBron, I'll be a fan. But until then, he seems like fool's gold to me. Like, honestly.
Why are we making so many references to the Matthew movie Fool's Gold? Yeah, Matthew McConaughey movies on this show. Anyway, speaking of fights and brawls, let's check in with our corner man, Mr. Vincent Smith.
Let's get ready to rumble!
This guy is a wrecking machine!
Vince joins us once again to talk about another trio of great fights from the world of UFC. So, Vince, what's on the card for today?
This week we're taking a look at the trio of highlights from the most recent event, UFC 187, which was headlined by Anthony Johnson versus Daniel Cormier for the light heavyweight belt, and Chris Weidman versus Vitor the Phenom Belfort for the middleweight belt. The first of those fights is kind of interesting going into it, because it was the first time in about 4 years that Jon Jones is not in the title picture, because the UFC indefinitely suspended him and stripped him of his title after getting caught in, I believe, the second DUI that he had. And if you intrepid Inside the Locker listeners remember, the last time I was on here, he also got busted for cocaine usage in his last fight against Daniel Cormier. So this is kind of the three strikes and you're out, and so Daniel Cormier gets a second shot, and Anthony Johnson gets a completely, probably the most opposite opponent from Jon Jones you could possibly have. because you have kind of the little Sherman tank that could in Daniel Cormier versus kind of the rangy, super lanky fighter in John Jones. So what did you think of this one, Brian?
Well, first of all, if you're really good at UFC, one strike and you're out could also be a policy. But it, this fight, okay, I'm going to ask the stupid question. Which guy had the mohawk?
you're thinking of the middleweight title belt.
Oh, we're starting. We're starting with Cormier versus Johnson. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one.
This fight was like the epitome of a brawl. There was a lot of grappling, a lot of attempts at submission, and Cormier spent a lot of time riding on Anthony Johnson's back like he was Yoda.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was. It kind of sucked watching it because, like, Anthony Johnson, every time he connected with something, it looked like Daniel Cormier just got hit by a truck. But he would just wing these giant wrecking ball punches to the point where he would throw himself off balance. And every time he did that, Daniel Cormier grabbed him and at one point kind of almost did like the WWE finishing move slam, kind of walked him right out into the middle of the cage and dropped him on his head. And Daniel Cormier kind of got to show what he wanted to do against John Jones, which was to show how good of a grappler he is, even though he doesn't look to be the bigger guy at 205 pounds. Because he just really wore out Rumble Johnson in this fight.
Yeah, and you know that move you're talking about, it was like, you know, he dragged him out to lay the smackdown on him like it was a rock bottom or something. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was just, it's interesting kind of, not only with John Jones being out of it, but I was kind of looking at like the top few rankings in the UFC light heavyweight division. And it's kind of anyone's game right now. Because, like, yeah, John Jones pretty much dominated that division, and he beat pretty much everyone out of that division that he fought. I mean, Machida is at 185 right now, and then he got the tar beat out of him by Luke Rockhold. Shogun is not in the top five. Mauricio Shogun Hua. Ryan Bader is kind of working his way back up, but he's still a top five guy. Alexander Gustafsson still needs to work his way back up because Anthony Johnson knocked him out. Because he was, before that point, the kind of the perennial number one contender, since he was the one guy to really put John Jones through his paces. And Vitor Belfort also dropped to 185. So even though John Jones is not a part of the title picture anymore, he cleared out the division to such a point that it's just like, well, okay, who's left to challenge the now champion Daniel Cormier? In the next few months, it's going to be a really interesting kind of equation to figure out when it comes to who's next in line, who's going to be facing who.
Damn it, you brought math into sports. Why are you trying to ruin things that I like, Vince?
Have you seen Moneyball? This is way before me.
That's true, that's true. So let's talk now about Chris Weidman versus Vitor Belfort, which is, Vitor Belfort, by the way, sounds like a Bond villain. I like that a lot. This was the middleweight title, and now I will ask you the question, which of these two guys is the one with the mohawk?
That would be Vitor Belfort, rocking the mullet hawk, the mull hawk. I don't even really know what to call that, like, hybrid Franken-style haircut that he was rocking tonight. With the cross, like, kind of shaved into the side of his head. Like, if there's one thing I never quite get about mixed martial arts fighters, it's they have some of the weirdest, like, hair topiaries that I've ever seen.
Hair topiaries, I like that. Okay, so Vitor Belfort, we talk about comparing sports to movies, and this fight was really dramatic. And by that I mean, I thought Belfort had this fight in the can. I mean, he really looked the strongest for most of the fight, and then it seemed like somebody gave Chris Weidman an Eye of the Tiger speech, and suddenly he turns it on, and the reversal of fortune all of a sudden at the end of this fight was intense.
Well, it was especially interesting because for those of you at home who didn't see it, The first time Chris Weidman tried to take Belfour down, Belfour shrugged him off. Like, pretty much, he didn't even, like, typically you're trying to get right in your shoulder into the guy's hips and do exactly what Daniel Cormier did to Anthony Johnson and just pick him up and slam him. But that was kind of the big question coming into this fight, was if Vitor Belfort was ever going to be able to keep it standing. And after that first takedown, he not only threw him off, he landed a big knee on the exit and just starts throwing bombs at Chris Weidman to where he's leaned up against the cage, he's covering up. Vitor is just throwing haymakers at him. Of every sort, opens him up with an elbow to the temple, and then just Weidman gets this one takedown, and one was all he needed, because the second he got to the ground, he just starts laying hammers into Vitor Belfort, which I thought that it was especially surprising, considering that Vitor is a long-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Like, the guy has been fighting since 1997, I believe, which is especially impressive that he's still fighting at such a level now. But, like, when he fought John Jones, he nearly caught him in an armbar. John Jones fought out of it because that guy's a monster, but it's still, like, messed up his arm. Like, he got a couple of, like, minor fractures in his arm from that armbar and couldn't train for a while. So Belfort is legit on the ground, but the second that Chris Weidman took him down and got into mount position, he could not do anything to get him back to a standing position.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's, I think, one of the things that we look for, not just in fights, but in sports in general, is, like, the, I guess, I know you'd really call either one of these guys the underdog. I mean, they're both kind of, it's a dog fight, don't get me wrong, but I don't think I'd call one of these guys the underdog. But when someone looks to have it all wrapped up, and then at the last minute, you know, like Lincoln Hawk going over the top, you know, you have that reversal of fortune, and I very much enjoyed watching that. Now, what's funny to me, Vince, is that you mentioned that Cormier Johnson and Weidman Belfort were the two headliners of this UFC event. However, for me, the absolute fight of the card, of the three we're going to talk about of this event, had to be Andrei Arlovsky versus Travis Brown.
Yeah, man. I mean, one of my favorite things about this sport is watching a card where you have all these huge names and everyone's getting all hyped up about it. And then, like, out of all of the fights, the ones that guys aren't really looking at, that seems to be kind of the dark horse in the race, just comes out and two guys throw down and utterly, like, steal the show from everyone else. Like, I remember, I forget which fight came after this one. I think it was Cowboy Cerrone versus John McDessie. But I remember Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg saying, like, man, those two guys gotta be, like, we gotta follow that? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I specifically asked Brian to wait until I got on Skype with him before he watched this match, just so that I could hear his reaction as he went through, because this is just an absolute wild slugfest.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious from the first punch that Arlovsky connected that this was not going to go three rounds. I wouldn't have put money on Travis Brown lasting all of one round, because Arlovsky, once he got in one punch, it was like tequila shots. Like Jim Brewer used to say about tequila shots is, you know, you get one in, if one sneaks in, it's bringing all of its buddies. And with Arlovsky, it's once that first punch came in, it snuck all of its buddies up underneath Travis Brown's chin. And the brilliant thing about this is, like, you're watching Travis Brown on his last legs for the entirety of this round, and yet somehow manages to connect a few onto Arlovsky that knock him for a loop. And I was like, okay, Travis Brown is standing on spaghetti legs, but he's still throwing some hammers.
Yeah, man, it's the crazy thing about the heavyweight division is every single guy in that division has fight-ending power. There is no point at which you can sleep on any of these guys, because the second that they connect, they can put the lights out. Like, to say that Travis Brown landed a few good ones on Andrei Arlovsky is to... I don't even know if that kind of does it justice, because Arlovsky has him once again pinned up against the cage, and, you know, to Arlovsky's credit, he's being very patient, he's not rushing in, and Travis Brown just lands this giant left hook that drops Arlovsky right down to the mat, and he starts scrambling back up, but Travis Brown's brains are already, like, scrambled around inside his head, where he's just like, I guess I should do something now, and then he's just trying to catch up back to him. And just, yeah, it was back and forth. And if you want to use an example of, like, the wild turns of fortune that you look for in this sport, that's a perfect example of it.
It was brutal. Brutal, brutal, brutal. And, man, I can understand how this was the fight that really got people to their feet in that arena. It was, oh, my God. It's a movie fight. It was like watching a movie fight. And I really, like, and you were right to listen to me watching on Skype, because... it was just like conversation. What the fuck? It was amazing.
It was one of those ones where you kind of find out, like, how high can my voice go? Because you start out kind of going like, oh, we caught him. Oh, oh, like, just because it keeps escalating step by step. And just, yeah, there is really no end to it until someone drops to the canvas.
Absolutely. And again, I can't believe that wasn't the headliner of this. But, man, great stuff again, Vince. Thanks so much for coming on and talking about these. And I look forward to the next UFC pay-per-view that we get to discuss with you.
For sure. And we got Aldo McGregor coming up pretty soon, so we get to look forward to that one, too.
McGregor! McGregor of the Clan McGregor! I can't wait for that. Thanks a lot, Vince.
No worries, man. Talk to you later.
Alright, and we're back. And pursuant to our being sports nerds, we're going to now engage in one of every sports fan's favorite activities... debate. And today what we're debating is the best movie of the summer of 2015 thus far.
Halftime show.
Halftime show. The summer halftime show. I like that.
In June.
So we have, this really boils down to three big contenders for best movie of the summer so far. It boils down to Avengers Age of Ultron, mm-hmm. Furious 7, mm-hmm. and, of course, Hot Pursuit. No, I'm just kidding. Mad Max Fury Road.
Is there one we're missing, like, a good one that came out?
Pitch Perfect 2?
Fuck that movie.
Elliot says, fuck that movie. Put it on the poster.
I mean, it's...
So, I definitely
I'm
think...
joking, Elliot.
Oh, sorry. I don't know, like, I'm that's, saying, like, I agree with a lot of your taste, but, like...
Coming from me, that might not be a joke.
Yeah, like, it's like, on the San Andreas review, if y'all listen to it on one of us, like... apparently, like, some, like, and not saying everybody has to know my taste, but they were, like, really surprised that Armageddon was my favorite movie.
I don't know why they were surprised. They obviously, like, I heard that, I was like, guys, why are you surprised that Elliot likes Armageddon?
And then, like, Chris was like, well, you only can say that now because Cargill, like, I'm like, no.
Nope.
I have been saying that for years.
Don't need Cargill's permission to like bad.
No.
No. So, my clear front runner this year for best movie of the summer so far has got to be Mad Max Fury mm-hmm. Road. I just think...
what a day!
What a lovely, lovely day!
Beast was awesome in that.
I think the things that are great about that movie are legitimately spectacularly great. I think the criticisms against that movie are fucking laughable.
Yeah.
Things like, there's not much of a story.
It's mad.
Have you seen a Mad Max movie? Things like, you know, male rights activist groups, which still makes me want to throw open my mouth to say out loud... thinking, like, well, they only made Charlize Theron's character the hero because of feminist agenda. I'm like, and shut up.
I'm going to go shit in their fedora.
I'm going to shit in your fedora because apparently you also have not been paying attention to the fact that Max has been a pretty passive participant in his own stories since day one.
That's
okay?
The point of how they tell that story.
Yeah. Because the first one, until Goose bites it, Goose could be argued to be the main character of that movie. And in the second one, he randomly comes across a feud that has been brewing for a long time
between, you know, a pack of outlaws led by Humongous and the last gasoline supply on the planet. He's like, oh, what's this? Maybe I can make money off this. Like, so he's a passive participant in his own stories always. Meanwhile, in Fury Road, holy fucking shit. When I say spectacular, that movie really pushes to the limit what that word means. It is a spectacle unlike anything I have ever seen.
And I agree. It's a spectacle. I really enjoyed it. I mean, for me, I mean, it's easily a 9 out of 10. Hmm. Easily. I mean, the effects are amazing. The dialogue is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finish. Well, it's just, I think this movie, though, it suffers a little bit from, each movie on this list this summer suffers from is there's so many good reviews about Fury Road that I came into that movie expecting a perfect movie.
Hmm.
And I got a really, really, really great movie to the point where I noticed the flaws too much. So for me to really enjoy it, like, I noticed that for the first 30 minutes, I really didn't know what was going on.
But hear this and witness me, Elliot. Wouldn't you say that going into any movie with that kind of expectation? I mean, none of the movies we're talking about on this list are perfect movies. You know what I mean? Then I feel like you're right. The reviews for all three of these films have been fairly effusive.
Yeah.
Maybe none so much as Fury Road. I'm really surprised that the best reviewed movie of the three we're going to talk about focus on is Mad Max Fury Road. Even Age of Ultron did not get the widespread amount of glowingly positive reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because, this is my theory on it, I think it's because we have become a little weary of effects-driven, CGI-effects-driven movies.
Yeah.
So when we see a movie that is, like, I can't remember what the percentage is, but something crazy, like 90, 92%
practical. There's only one shot that's not practical.
In Mad Max Fury Road.
And it's the one shot that's in the trailer of the tornado.
It is one of those rare instances where me, as, you know, a jaded film fan, sits there going, I have no idea how you did this.
Yeah, like, the people on those sticks and balancing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How he didn't kill anyone on that movie is beyond me.
Yeah, because even the Expendables movies managed to kill one stunt guy per movie.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Nah, that's gotta be a shitty... They died in vain.
Yes, they were, in fact, expendable.
Ah!
As it turns out.
I just wish that there would... They have such a rich world they build in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
In which movie? In Fury Road.
Okay. Yeah.
Such a rich... I want to see them explain to me... Just like a line... Why these cars look like porcupines.
Mm-hmm.
These cars, like, what's the mythology behind the
have you seen it just the one time?
Yeah.
That's the thing. It could expand upon the point of one of the criticisms being there isn't enough story and not really understanding what's going on in the first half hour. I think when you see it again, because I've seen it twice so far, I think you do catch some things that you miss, and you learn a little bit about the other factions.
Well, there's the gasoline farm, the bullet farm, the gasoline town.
Yeah.
They're all brothers. They're on the same family.
Yeah.
He's trying to breed a perfectly non-fucked up by the nuclear holocaust baby.
And I like that they address that, because none of the other Mad Max movies have really addressed the cancer.
The effects of the wasteland.
The cancer from the nuclear fallout. And I thought this was this. By the way, Nicholas Hoult in this movie is goddamned phenomenal.
He steals the show.
He really does, because he's playing this character who would be in any other Mad Max movie, a one-off, throw him under the wheels, who cares, he's a baddie from the wasteland. And he gives that character so much heart and so much depth, and we're, like, rooting for him by the end. And he has, like, and I love the fact that the movie incorporates Viking culture, it incorporates, like, barbarian culture.
Also, it doesn't have nudity where it doesn't need it.
Exactly.
Like, they don't, like, there's a scene where there's a naked woman, like, luring people into a trap. They don't show her.
Yeah.
And that's great, like, because, like, any other movie, like, if that's a part of the plot, they could just, you have license to show. It's like, fine, whatever, it's realistic.
Yeah.
They go out of their way to not show it because they respect their audience to know that if you're seeing this, you're an adult, and you don't need to see boobs on screen to go to the damn movie.
Well, and I think it's because George Miller understands that people are going to be seduced by the stunt work.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be gratuitous with the sex.
I think that's the point. I think that's why this movie has gotten so much praise, is it's refreshing.
Yeah, it is.
After so much CG and so much CG blood and gratuitous shit and, you know, nudity for the sake of nudity, like, San Andreas, like, the main female character wears a low-cut top the entire time.
Yeah.
For, like, this one scene where she's swimming underwater, you can basically see her boobs. And it's like, I don't need that. Like, yep. You're making me think less of your movie by having this in there.
Yeah. Whatever, I'm buying a ticket right now.
What is her name? Alexis Daddario? I mean, she looks great, but it's like, I'm not here for this.
Daddario. Yeah, look at that.
No, but, ma'am, and then the prosthetic work on Charlize Theron, like, that shit was amazing.
Yeah. I think you're right, Elliot. I think the reason I'm picking Mad Max is that it is it's as refreshing as a spray of chrome to the teeth.
That was a touching fucking scene.
Yes, it was.
Like, to have, like, he is the god in your culture, say, I see you.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, that was a great fucking performance.
Yes. And I love the fact, and I didn't know this until we started reviewing it, but I love the fact that Immortan Joe is played by the same actor who played Toe Cutter in the first Mad Max. I love that. I absolutely love that. Oh, so good. All right, but Elliot has a different opinion about the best movie this summer.
Best movie this summer, to me, and this is, I don't think this is, you know...
You're not going to stand alone on this, by the way. There are a lot of people who are going to agree
with
you.
But it seems like there's like a lot of backlash in this movie. I think Avengers Age of Ultron is the best movie so far this year, in my opinion, and definitely of the summer. Like, to me, it feels like, as somebody who's been reading comics for 20, 25 years, it feels like the first real Avengers movie, and the first, like, in terms to get that scope. It is the first movie that I have seen of any comic book movie to really get the scope of what the comic books are going for. Like, to see, like, that one scene in the cathedral where it's, you know, Vision, Hawkeye, Black Widow, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk.
It's a splash page on the big screen.
Yeah, and it's amazing to watch. Like, Joss Whedon does a good job of juggling all these characters, and you can tell, because it almost comes apart at the seams, all these demands from Kevin Feige and the studio and all them. Like, we got to have this stupid-ass Thor scene. Okay, we'll have it. I liked it, but I can see why people don't like it. I just think it's an amazing feat to make. I like the story. I've seen it at least 5 times now.
Damn, dude.
Like, when I love a movie, I love a movie.
Yeah, but I mean, when I love a movie, I usually see it a maximum of 3 times in the theater. And you've already seen Ultron 5 times.
And one of my personal favorite things about a movie is, like, for a movie that's so packed, it takes the time to have a party on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking love that. I love when you can just see people just hanging out. It's like, hey, can you lift this hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me see what I can do here. So, I mean, it just, it takes advantage of all the groundwork laid, and they really take some time to be in that universe. And, you know, one of the complaints is that, you know, they don't spend enough time doing this and that. It's like, well, they've already done that.
Yeah.
This movie assumes you've seen the prior 11 movies.
Well, and I think that party scene, Elliot, is illustrative of what makes a Joss Whedon superhero movie so great, is that it feels like a fucking party throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know, even in its darkest moments, you still feel like you're having this grand superhero party right there in front of you on the big screen. So,
and we got a lot more from Hawkeye and Black Widow. Yep.
I loved Hawkeye's the way they fleshed out his character.
Yeah, and like the fact that like, because in the comic books, he's like a single guy. He's sort of a ne'er-do-well. He's just like, oh, I'm just sort of a guy on one's team, and he's like a bachelor's bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is the center. He's the heart of that team.
Yep.
Above Captain America. Captain America's the leader.
Yeah,
but Hawkeye's the heart.
He kind of takes a back seat in this movie.
Yeah, and it's impressive that Joss Whedon did that. So for all those reasons. Like, that's my best movie of the summer.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. What do you think, JC?
I mean, I would go with Mad Max. I think when... I don't know that I've ever called any movie perfect. And, like, I try not to throw the word, like, masterpiece around willy-nilly. And when I think of movies in my life that I consider really close to perfect, movies that I just enjoy, that I love seeing over and over again, stuff like Big Trouble in Little China, where it's just, like, huge pieces, complicated worlds... No weak parts, really. I think Mad Max is really close to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that the first time, and seeing it again, and catching things that I didn't catch the first time, and knowing that there was a little bit more of a story there, I just needed to pay more attention. And it's easier to pay more attention to that stuff the second time, and the third time, that I haven't seen it the third time yet, but I'll probably catch it in theaters one or two more times. That's kind of why I just think it's... One of those movies that holds a lot of value for me because I know I'll watch it over and over again. And it's so impeccably done with all the stunt work. And as much as I loved Age of Ultron, the practical stunt work in this kind of made me take a back seat and think about Age of Ultron and been like, well, as great as it was kind of a lot of what we've seen before. And I don't think I've ever seen a movie like Mad Max.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes me love. And I think on a certain level that's... getting to a point in my life where I feel I am starting to recognize that I'm old and grouchy, because it's like I pine for the days of practical effects. You know, like when we see movies like The Raid, it blows me away because I'm like, look at all the practical work they're doing on this movie. And so when I watch something like Mad Max Fury Road, which has a level of stunt work that should require all of James Cameron's effects houses. Mm-hmm. It should require that. By the standards of filmmaking as they are right now, especially a blockbuster cinema, that should require all of the CG imaginable. And to have the balls to be relentless enough to say, you know what, no, we're going to do this movie practically the same way we fucking did it 30 years ago.
Yeah.
We're not going to change how we approach the movie. Yeah. We're just going to make it a little bit bigger and not use CG as a crutch.
Well, I agree. And I think, you know, doing practical effects lends a weight to those to that world that isn't there with CG, because even if you do the best CG, I can still sort of tell it's CG. Like, and not because it looks bad, but just because it just, something's off. Like,
because you know how reality looks.
Exactly. Like, I know how reality looks.
Now, that being said, I don't mean to make it sound like I'm dogging on Ultron for using CG. There's a big difference between making a movie about cars driving across a desert and making people fly and throw buildings around. Like, I get it. I get the need for CG, and I love
Age of Ultron. I like how Ryan has been on the internet so long.
He's
getting ahead of the
stop the trolls arguments. At the gate. Yeah, no. No, I get it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, sometimes you need the CG.
Brian, people can't fly.
What's he supposed to do? If people saw him saving, then they would kill him. And it's just like, shut up. No, the thing is, I get it. And I love Age of Ultron. I just, there's something about in like the lizard part of my brain when it comes to movies. The kid that sits in front of the TV watching shitty 80s, you know, sword and sandal movies because all of the monsters were made by hand. Mm-hmm. That so impresses me and makes me pine for that time that when I see something like Mad Max Fury Road that has the balls to do that on the biggest scale I have ever seen, I'm thoroughly
but
impressed.
But here's the thing. You love film more than I love film.
Okay.
And I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
I love 2D animation. I know more than most people.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. And so I am extremely judgmental about animation. Like, I could give or take Pixar. I'm not that impressed with them.
Wow.
Because I've seen better. Like, and I think when you love something, you will sit there and watch these because you know everything behind it. Like, when I watch a Studio Ghibli movie, I'm like, man, look at that matte painting.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much detail in that background. So I'm enjoying it on a different level. And I just think that may lead to, you know, you love the practical effects, and I love them too. But I just, and I know that if you see it twice, you see more of the story. I just wish there was a little bit more. It was just given to me at the beginning, just a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe like a little, just a one minute, get me caught up. Just like a little prologue. See, I mean, they sort of do that, but they don't go enough.
And here's the thing, I can't remember if we talked about it on the review or not, but a theory has started to surface that he's not Mad Max.
Yeah.
He's the grown-up version of the feral kid from Road Warrior. Because you remember at the end of Road Warrior, you find out that the narrator the whole time was the feral kid. And he talks about how it was then up to him to lead.
Mm.
And I'm like, holy shit. And you see those flashbacks that Tom Hardy's Max has, where he's seeing these people. We don't know who these people are. They're not Max's kids, because Max only had a son, and it's clearly a little girl.
Mm.
And they're like, why couldn't you save us? All this other stuff. It makes more sense if that was the tribe of people that were then entrusted to the feral kid when he grew up than that being the same Max. Why would he have a new family? Who would these new people be?
Plus, the old Max went all racist and shit.
It's weird. He found a few more people on the planet and then decided he didn't like them. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I tried to kill his wife. It was weird.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess I'm just going to throw out, I think Furious 7 definitely has its place in top shelf of summer movies this year.
Yeah.
I think, you know, James Wan proved that just because he wasn't the guy that initially turned the franchise around doesn't mean he can't step up to the plate and give us things we hadn't seen yet and yet keep intact the things that we love. And, you know, and those movies are different because those movies have a lot of internal consistency, but they don't conform to things like physics or reason.
You know, we mentioned this during the San Andreas review. Like, if there was ever an opportunity for a shared universe to just come out of nowhere,
yeah,
they could have had The Rock be Hobbs,
yeah,
and like have that shit happen, and then you could have had an appearance by Dom as their crew races away from the earthquakes. that could tie in perfectly with their movies.
Yeah.
And have like a, this is Dom's movie. This, I mean, this is a Hobbs's movie, The Rock's character. Huh. It would, right, it would just been a skin change.
See,
just,
I thought there was,
costume.
I thought there was going to be a crossover in Furious 7 when Hobbs walks out with the fucking, like, minigun. I was like, oh shit, he's Roadblock. Roadblock's real name is Hobbs. That's what's happening right now. But unfortunately,
honestly, if they were smart, that'd be that would be hilarious and awesome if G.I. Joe invests.
You might, you know what? You might as well.
You might as well,
because G.I. Joe is based on toys, and it seems like every screenplay for a Fast and the Furious movie approaches physics as if you're playing with toys.
You know what? We were talking in our review like a month or two ago about how you can't find Furious 7 toys. Fucking found
them. You did?
Yes.
We're buying all of them.
Like,
we're,
I got Dom's car. Like, the one with the tire on the back. She's nice. Awesome.
Huh. I've kind of gotten back into toy collecting as of late. And Funko Pops. And
oh, yeah.
I got some original Ninja Turtle stuff. And yes. Yeah, like, I'm on board again. Plus, I've already made arrangements for my next Mondo poster, which will be the first new Mondo poster I've bought in over a year. Mm. And I'm super fucking excited
about
that.
Will you let me know if you ever want to let that Escher-style Cabin in the Woods poster
off? Oh, I'm not getting rid of anything.
Damn it. Really.
Let's be clear about that. But I think we've kind of... And I think it's funny. Like, we've kind of boiled down Ultron and Fury Road, you know, when we're talking about this summer, kind of the way that, you know, you talk about, is it LeBron or yeah. Jordan? Really, this is more a question of MVP.
Yeah.
Really, this is an MVP debate more than it's, because we're only talking about stuff this year. So this is like, you know,
Steph Curry versus
LeBron, versus Steph Curry. Yeah, you know, who's the MVP this year?
So Steph Curry is Fury Road. Mm-hmm. And that makes perfect sense, because it's the upstart. It's doing things a lot of the old ways.
Plus, doesn't LeBron call himself Superman or something? Does LeBron have
Dwight Howard does.
Oh, Dwight Howard does. Dwight. Well, fuck Dwight Howard.
Yeah. Dwight Howard's pitch perfect.
And that is how we will end the show this week. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Just a reminder, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast and like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And you can follow us, excuse me, bacon burp. You can follow us individually. I'm at Bri Guy Salisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At JCDelion1.
And Adam Charles is at @_beef. I can do things with my mouth. Heyo!
He said that on a Saturday night a few times.
I know, right? And thanks again for joining us. We hope you've had a good time. And I'm going to end the show the way I always do, reminding you, paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon, when it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us.